Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
It's great to be with you for this Christmas edition of Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, we revisit some of the positive, inspiring and thought-provoking stories that Africa Link brought to you over the past year. Like the Rwandan self-made millionaire farmer who claims playing music to his animals is boosting his yield.
The rabbits are treated to some rhythm and blues. Welcome to the farm of Rwanda's self-made millionaire, Sina Gerard.
And who said space exploration is not for Africa? For this Ugandan, even the sky is not the limit.
I used to build small thrusters. Well, you can call them small rockets. I used to make small rockets when I was 13.
And we had the four Nigerian schoolgirls who invented a urine-powered generator. Some of the stories lined up for you in this Africa Link Christmas special. I'll be right back.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
And we begin with the dancing pigs. Rwanda's self-made millionaire, Sina Gerard, is best known for coming up with the Akabanga chili sauce, but has since branched out to a thriving enterprise that sells wine, fruit juice and other products. He's obviously one who is not afraid to try out new things, but he went a step further when he began playing music to his domestic animals. He says the music has helped increase the reproduction and the yield from the animals. Our correspondent in Kigali, Flora Kaitesi, visited his unusual farm in northern Rwanda and sent us this report.
The music you hear is a reggae song by the late Lucky Dube. The audience is a host of pigs. If you listen closely, you will hear them grunting to the music in the background. Portable speakers are installed in the pens where the pigs are kept. A few meters away is a rabbit hutch. The rabbits are treated to some rhythm and blues. Welcome to the farm of Rwanda's self-made millionaire, Sina Gerard. He is a farmer who built an empire known as Urwibutso Enterprise. But it has been a long way up. Over the past 25 years, Gerard built his business from a very modest background. He started out selling food and bread at a roadside stall. The bread was baked at his parents' farm, but after doing this for some time, he decided to try his hand in business.
The first idea I tried out was a bakery. In 1987, I baked bread for sale and became very popular across the country, and I started generating a lot of money. In 1997 to 98, I ventured into planting and selling passion fruit, but later realized that it didn't really mean much to sell fruits without any value addition, and in 1999, the first produced fresh juice hit the market.
After dabbling in juice for a while, Gerard devised a plan to play music to his farm animals. Perhaps the most unique of his ideas, he says that playing music for the animals greatly increased productivity, both in quality of meat and reproduction.
The music has been very beneficial. We had been used to them birthing 10 piglets, but after introducing the music, they became very calm and peaceful. They feed well, sleep well, they mate well, and now they are producing as many as 15 piglets.
Sina Gerard says he discovered the technique during a study tour in Belgium 6 years ago, but to prove that the idea was actually working, he reared some of the animals with music and others without. those reared with music doubled their yields.
You see, every living thing needs a good and warm environment around it. These piglets grow very fast and produce high-quality meat.
Gerard says that his business is motivated by the desire to assist farmers to gain better farming skills and also help the poorest members of the society emerge from poverty.
What I have learned is that the country's economy is its people and its natural wealth. My desire is that the people emerge from poverty. You see, we rear animals, but we also have fruit plantations. All these raw materials we receive are as a result of their efforts.
Gerard gives away around 150 piglets to local families every month, mostly around the area where his enterprise is headquartered in northern Rwanda, which is where he was also born. Keen to stimulate the local agricultural economy, Gerard also gives farmers free seeds, fertilizer and training, and buys their crops when they are ready for harvest.
Flora Kaitesi with that report on those seemingly happy animals. According to the Christian Nativity story, a bright star known as the Star of Bethlehem or Christmas Star led three wise men to pay homage to little Jesus. Human beings have always been fascinated by what lies above us, and Africans are no exception. Now, though, Chris Nsamba, a Ugandan flight engineer, is taking matters into his own skies. He hopes to build a homemade orbital glider that could fly to the top layer of the Earth's atmosphere. Simone Schlindwein caught up with him, and her report was adapted for Africa Link by Mark Caldwell.
Round a dozen men are rubbing the surface of the glider with emery paper before applying paint. They're in the backyard of a small brick-built house in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. They're working on a two-seater glider. But it's not just an aeroplane. It's supposed to reach the stratosphere and track meteorites that enter the Earth's atmosphere. This glider is the start of the Ugandan space program, according to the project's director, amateur aeronautical engineer Chris Nsamba.
What you're looking at is a high-flying aircraft.
Nsamba says that at one time or another, every successful scientist has been called a madman, and some do think he's crazy. But he says there are plans to test the craft, known as the African Skyhawk, sometime next year. Within 5 years, we will have launched a probe into space, he says. Within a decade, we will put a man into space. But the present craft still lacks an engine, and Uganda does not have any trained astronauts. Nsamba says he will have to train and certify them himself. But despite the hurdles, there are apparently a lot of people who have put faith and money into the project. Nsamba says over 600 space enthusiasts have volunteered their time and opened their wallets to make his dream a reality. The project's been going for 2 years, and almost $80,000 have been spent on it so far. And Nsamba caught the space bug at an early age.
I used to build small thrusters. Well, you can call them small rockets. I used to make small rockets when I was 13. Now, I had a chance to interact with guys, adults, at that time who were in NASA, Brabra, in regards of space knowledge. Me, like, he taught me much,
and his enthusiasm is infectious. One of the donors is Nixon Lugenka.
Since my young ages, I was interested in space, so let it be a starting point to our descendants. Okay, when I get some free time at my job, then I come here. Some people have been having confidence in us.
But it's not just amateur enthusiasts who are lending their support. The AFP news agency reported that Uganda's veteran president, Yoweri Museveni, is backing the project and even promised some financial support during a private phone call to Nsamba last year. But in a country where soaring inflation means many are finding it increasingly hard to survive, some might argue that Uganda's slender resources might be put to better use. To which a spokesman for Museveni replied, "People interested in scientific research will always do their things, irrespective of the health of the economy and the turmoil happening around them."
That report by Simone Schlindwein was presented by Mark Caldwell. No power like human power. It's ironic that Nigeria, Africa's leading oil producer, suffers from frequent fuel and power shortages. Not long ago, in one of our Africa on the Move stories, we met some four Nigerian schoolgirls who say they had found an ingenious solution to the power outages from an unlikely source: urine. They claim the urine power generator produces clean energy which will save lives and help the planet as well. From Lagos, Sam Olukoya with the report.
The teenagers from the Doregos Private Academic School in Lagos say they created the urine-powered generator in order to save lives following several deaths resulting from the use of fuel-powered generators. Eniola Bello is one of the four students who created the generator.
Many Nigerians have died because of carbon monoxide poisoning from our carbon-based generators. So we decided to make a device that won't produce poisonous substances such as carbon monoxide, and many Nigerians won't have to lose their lives.
The generator has yet another environmental benefit in a country like Nigeria, where people pass urine in open places because there are very few public toilets. Another member of the student team, Adebola Duro Aino, explains.
When Nigerians know that they can power a generator by urine, definitely they won't litter everywhere with urine or pollute the environment with urine.
The girls carry out routine checks on the generator as they prepare to power it. It is powered with gas formed from urine stored in a sealed compartment attached to the generator. Urine rather than wastewater is used because it has more hydrogen. The students put metals inside the urine to help it form the hydrogen used to power the generator. Duro Aino told me how it works.
Oh, we have 6 liters of urine inside this compartment and it can power our generator for 36 hours. This urine is being electrolyzed, releasing hydrogen and oxygen gas. And then this goes into our gas tank. Our gas tank here stores in the gas. And anytime we need the gas, we can open up the gas tank and release the gas. And our generator is powered on.
And now it is time to power the generator. The bulbs in the room shine brightly as the generator comes alive.
Wow. So that's the generator working now?
Yes, the generator powers everything in the house.
And we can see the very bright light. So the first day you had light, how was the excitement? That first day there was light.
Very excited. We're right outside the school compound. We're so excited. We're like so happy once the generator...
It was not like in the Bible when they said, "Let there be light."
It was light.
The invention of the urine-powered generator comes at a time of growing public pressure on the Nigerian government to urgently address the country's electricity problems.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. According to the United Nations Environment Programme, UNEP, an area of a rainforest the size of a football field is being destroyed each second. The African continent contains about 30% of the world's global rainforests, second only to the Amazon. And nearly half of the Upper Guinea rainforest, one of the world's last remaining biodiversity hotspots, is found in Liberia. The West African nation endured 14 years of a brutal civil war in which the country's natural resources were used to fund the conflict. Now, President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is faced with the challenge of developing the country while conserving the environment at the same time. Tamasin Ford visited Sapo National Park in Liberia and filed this report to mark the World Environment Day.
A short canoe ride takes you into the heart of the rainforest. It's only when you reach the other side, the intense humidity of the thick, dense vegetation hits you. Sapo covers almost 600 square miles of virgin rainforest. It's packed with precious and endangered species, many still unknown to science. Augustine Jr., one of the volunteers working in the park, stops as the sound of monkeys echo faintly through the trees. So what kind of monkey was that?
It was a Diana monkey.
Diana monkey.
Diana monkey. There are many here.
More than 40 species of animals, including the Diana monkey, are legally protected in Liberia. It's home to one of the most endangered subspecies of chimpanzees in the world, as well as forest elephants, golden cats, leopards, and the rare pygmy hippo.
Then we have some animals here that people love to see, like the pygmy hippo you're talking about, the zebra tiger. We saw some animals that some of us don't know before, but we come across them in this park. And we got to know them from here.
During the war, Liberia's rainforests were pillaged for its wood and rich deposits of gold. When the UN imposed sanctions on Liberia's diamond exports in 2001, former President Charles Taylor turned to timber to fuel the war. By 2003, the UN estimated nearly half of the country had been sold to logging companies. The park became a refuge for thousands fleeing the fighting. Park warden Milton Tainiwan was one of them.
So what was it like living in the forest during the war?
During the war? It was too very bad. There was no food, no salt, no chicken soup, no soap to wash your clothes.
When Ellen Johnson Sirleaf came to power in 2006, she revoked all existing logging contracts. New forestry legislation was passed, and attempts are being made to protect Liberia's vast expanse of forest and wildlife. There are now three protected areas, including Sapo, and nine more are on the books waiting to be passed into law. But in a post-war country where foreign investment is crucial for economic growth, conserving the environment while bringing about development becomes a tricky balancing act. Maurice Kamara is from the government's Forestry Development Authority.
If you want to balance conservation with money, money will win. If you want to balance conservation with livelihood in a post-war situation, I can tell you definitely, livelihood will win.
And this is the challenge President Sirleaf faces. The country needs electricity, roads, hospitals and schools. And to do this, revenues from foreign investments are crucial. Since Sirleaf came to power, more than a third of Liberia's land mass has been handed over to foreign concessions, at around $19 billion. But it's not all bad news, according to Bernard Forster, a consultant based in Sapo for Fauna and Flora International. FFI is one of the many NGOs working with the government to help protect the environment.
The good news, it's still a good forest. It's surrounded of many threats, though that's probably not the good news. But we still have all the animals we suspect to be there.
Last year, the government stepped up its efforts to rid Sapo of the remaining illegal miners. Around 30 park wardens and 50 volunteers are employed to patrol the area, welcoming the few tourists who trek the distance from the capital to visit. Along with organisations like FFI, they educate people on the damaging effects of the illegal bushmeat and pet trade.
Tamasin Ford with that report from Sapo National Park in Liberia. For many Christians in Africa, Christmas time is a time to look good. A new shirt, a new dress, and in most cases, especially for the ladies, a new hairstyle. Initially, only women in Africa went into the hair business, but now more and more men are venturing into this lucrative industry. Freddie, a Ugandan hairstylist, is one of them. He started with a small salon, and as his clientele grew, Freddy plans to expand and even start his own hair and beauty college. From Kampala, Leila Ndinda reports.
Two things welcome you to Freddy's Beauty Parlor in Kampala. First, and then this.
We are glad to see you, our customer. What should we do with the hair?
Freddy's salon is owned by 32-year-old Fred Sitenda, a hairdresser graduate from Pivot Point College in South Africa. Freddy has been in the hairdressing business for 13 years now. He explains why he chose this career.
I'm an artist. Hairdressing is a talent of art. I like what I'm doing because I'm an artist. But creating a style, it has to be in you.
In the first 5 years of his hairdressing career, Fred was employed in four salons, but his goal was to save some money and open a salon of his own. By 2003, he had saved $4,000 that wasn't enough to provide everything he needed. So he had to prioritize what to buy immediately and what could be bought later. Among the things that he first bought were...
The sink, shampoo unit, a water heater, 6 plastic chairs, 2 dryers. The building wasn't clean. I had to put tiles in it, paint. That was it.
From these humble beginnings, Freddy has transformed his salon to become one of the biggest salons in Uganda. Profits are reinvested in the business. This is evidenced by the work in progress in the backyard. Carpenters are busy fixing a new room that will be used for massage. Freddy's salon is a one-stop beauty shop. In addition to working on hair, other services offered include manicure and pedicure, body massage and facials. This has endeared Fred to much of the female population of Kampala.
Get everything I want here. I get good treatments. I do my nails. I get the best. The prices are okay. A bit high, but fine. Because of what I get. I wouldn't mind paying more if I'm getting the good services.
Fred Sitenda says it has not been a smooth ride to where he is now. His two biggest challenges are unreliable landlords and workers. An example is when his landlord sold the building to another landlord who told him to relocate because he wanted to renovate the building. Workers, on the other hand, keep changing jobs. Steve is an exception. He has worked with Fred for 2 years now.
This is one of the best things that have ever happened to me working with Fred because of the way he handles the people that work with him. Basically, it's not a boss-subordinate kind of relationship, but we work as a team and we're friends.
Fred, a father of two, believes in the old adage that all eggs should not be put in one basket. While most of the profits are invested, he has also bought a car, built a house, and is now setting up a farm. He says farming is in his blood because while growing up, he used to look after cows. But now, hairdressing is his passion.
Hairdressing, I think, is the best job someone will do. We enjoy what we do and we meet many people. In the morning, leaving home, you have to comb your hair. You think of me, Fred. I wish Fred was here and I would have styled my hair. I'm proud of my job because everyone thinks of me early in the morning.
Fred's future dream is to start a beauty school in Uganda.
Leila Ndinda with that report from Kampala. And that brings us to the end of this Africa Link special Christmas edition. And as always, if you wish to send your comments or suggestions on the program, our email address is feedback.africa@dw.de. And our postal address, Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. You've been good company from me and all the Africa Link team. Have yourself a Merry Christmas.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on.